This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by BlackStarLabs.com, who are the best-tasting protein powder out there. You can check them out at BlackStarLabs.com. Don't forget to mention the FitCast when you place your order. Welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 192. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and along with me is Lee Peel of LeePeel.com. What's up, Lee? Of LeePeel.com.
Yes, I am. You remember that?
And of Body by Eats, aka Troubleshooter.
I have so many web addresses, you can't even keep them straight. That's how all over the place I am. I'm a mover, I'm a shaker. Okay.
Facebook.com/fans Bill. Of Twilight.
Oh, I've never seen them, Kevin.
Me neither.
But you know,
I just got a little bit more respect for you. Sure. Not that it's bad that people have seen it.
I'm not opposed to it.
I can't watch that stuff, man.
There's some good music in it, from what I hear.
Oh, it's great. I mean, it's got some Paramore in it.
And some Death Cab.
Indeed.
Some, I think there were some stars in one of the movies.
In too. The second one, yes.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, how bad could it be with the soundtrack that's pretty kick-ass? I don't know, but I've never read the book, so I've never seen the movie.
I just don't like the girl that's in it.
Kristen Stewart?
Yeah, I liked her in one movie, but then, like, now that she's in these vampire movies and she just looks like a sucker. She looks like a...
Fucker.
No, like, she's just like
come across bad in many ways.
No, she just looks like
vampire movie for one. So you got that angle, and then you have the whole other. You're not gonna keep to non-off-topic talk.
No, I'm just saying she looks like she's just going after some dude, and he's a effing vampire. Oh, like, what okay, are you gonna
so,
do?
So, okay, so you're talking about
she's
it in a weakling kind of
yeah.
a sense. Just sucker, like she's a fool. Okay, see, I wasn't picking up what you were putting down there, Kevin. I don't know.
Welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast.
Panic Room, I called it. I said
she was in Panic Room. No,
yeah, when I was pushing it, I said that little girl's gonna be a star, man, and I was right.
She's little gonna did be I know. In a movie called Wonderland with that guy that's gonna be in a Facebook movie. And then again, in that she's just like whiny in it. Like it's like that same thing I used to in Donnie Darko. I liked her. When I watched Donnie Darko, but now I don't like her.
Okay. Well.
I'm so sorry about this off-topic discussion at the beginning of the show, but Lee and I haven't talked in a while, so.
Yeah, it was somewhat relevant.
Yeah.
Some people want to look like Kristen Stewart in a training sense. They want to know how she gets that body, and this is a fitness show. So there you go. Oh, I forgot to mention an off-topic that there was a monster called Ronnie Coleman or something like that in Little Monsters.
Yes,
which
you're
was
right.
Relevant
you are right
to the bodybuilding industry. So therefore, this is no longer off-topic.
He played the. He was the fat kid.
He was like the bully or something.
Yeah, he
right?
was the fat kid. Yeah.
See,
he wore all Celtics and Red Sox stuff.
There is.
I'm so sorry to all those people that hate us talking about off-topic stuff, but we're going to get right into the show this week. Again, we've been gone for a couple weeks, so we got some awesome stuff for you this episode. First, in a little bit, Jonathan Fass and myself will be talking with Brett Contreras for about half an hour, so that's going to be awesome. In terms of upcoming guests, I'm going to be interviewing Eric Cressy this Thursday about his new book that he has coming out. I just got a copy of it, and looking at it, I think I'm about 40 or 45 pages in so far, and it's fantastic stuff. It is very much a sequel to Maximum Strength. So I think anyone out there that like that, you're going to love this. And it kind of, in a terms of programming, it really is a sequel because it gets you from maximum strength to the next level. It's really for intermediate to advanced trainees. So send in your questions for Eric to questions@theficast.com. And like I said, I'm going to be interviewing him on Thursday morning. So please get those questions in as soon as possible. Otherwise, you know, you're going to kind of miss out. So this is for the people that download the podcast on Sunday night and Monday morning. Also, Lee, you're going to love this.
Okay.
Tom Venuto.
Hear that sigh? It's just automatic.
It is. If you go back to any time I ever mentioned Tom Venuto. You hear that? So Tom is going to be coming on the show. He also has a new book coming out. Like, this is a busy month. This is some awesome stuff coming out. But Tom has a also, I got a early copy of his book, read through it two nights ago, and it is absolutely fantastic. It is something everyone should definitely check out. And I'm going to be interviewing Tom next week. So if you'd like to get in questions for Tom about fat loss, you know, any kind of nutrition stuff, he is always has great answers, and he's always a fantastic guest. I mean, we've had him on, I think, two times before, and it's always a blast to have him on. I think he was even on our 150th episode. So he is, you know, he's definitely a guy that we love to have on, and he's pumped to come back on the show. Lee, you good with that?
Oh, yeah, I was just a little heart fluttering.
Yeah, I'll let you, you can, you know, think about
it. Give me a moment to myself while you talk about the special project announcement with interview.
That's right. Project announcement is coming soon. What the project is going to be launched October 1st. We're going to start selling it. It is something that is a pretty big deal, and it's something that I think we've talked about on the show a couple times, but Lee's been able to check it out, and we have about a dozen other elite strength coaches and trainers using it right now, and the feedback has been phenomenal. There's some I can't talk about it too much just yet, but that will be accompanied with an interview with the person that I'm working with on this, which, you know, if people really think hard, they can probably figure it out. So, yeah, great stuff coming down the line. And October 1st is the day that we will start selling it. And I'm pretty sure just about everyone who's listening to this podcast is going to benefit from it in one way or another. And probably you're going to benefit from it in a multitude of ways. There's some, it is like the ultimate package of stuff ever.
It's pretty excellent. I've enjoyed what I have previewed of it. It was very excellent.
And
I don't say that easily.
No. I mean, I sent Lee like $400 through PayPal last night, but it had nothing to do with that. And last but not least, I am going to open up some more slots for online clients as things are going to be dying down once October 1st comes. So if you want to kind of get in line, I'm going to be taking on probably two or three more online clients. And, you know, like I said, the response from my online clients have been phenomenal, and it's, you know, been great to work with people across the country. Lee, as you know, like, it's really cool to work with a wide demographic of people and not just the people that live in and around Woburn, Massachusetts. So, if you are interested, just shoot me an email at kevin@thefickass.com, or you can go to kevinlarby.com for more details. There's a little tab on the top where you can get some more information. And last but not least, Lee, what's up? What's been going on? LeePeel.com.
There's some cool things going on. I'm going to be releasing a follow-up. I did a survey. I don't know if you caught it or not, because I know you've been pretty busy. Anyway, I did this really massive survey where I surveyed a bunch of people about training and what they consider to be hard or not hard, and how happy they are with the results versus work and lifestyle and stuff like that. So I'm doing another follow-up post about that sometime this week. I'm going to be talking about Tom's book. I am going to be showing pictures of my renovation, because it's just fun, and it may show some people how to do it themselves if they want to as well, because I have some readers and fans that are into that. So if you want to see what it's like to turn your basement or whatever room into kind of like a dance studio / workout room or whatnot, you can definitely check that out. And there's some general blog posts and updates. As always, there's a challenge going on right now for my members, so keeping up with that and keeping everybody encouraged and making sure everyone's accountable and doing that. So it's just kind of rolling along there at leepill.com, but as always, very, very interactive, and always trying to keep something for every week that comes along. So yeah, that's what's up, Kevin.
Awesome. Sounds exciting. People should definitely check that stuff out. And we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back with the mailbag, where we're going to be talking about a wide range of subjects, including but not limited to body weight training. Some cool stuff coming up, so stick around. All right, we're here in the mailbag, and we got our very first email, and I will send it over to Lee. It's from Laurel. I think I got that right. I consider myself very fit. I'm 5'2 and 112 pounds. I can hold a plank for 2 minutes and easily do three sets of 30 leg lifts, holding a 5-pound ball with my feet. I have had two children, and I'm 45 years old. If I don't suck my gut in, it is not flat or even close. It isn't fat. It just hangs out if I am not consciously holding it in. What else can I do to get it flat, to be flat all the time?
Okay. I'm going to make this quick because I've been told to. Notes. Whatever.
Bullshit, Lee.
Let's make this one a quickie, is what it says, Kevin. Okay, at least on my copy. So anyway, so what I'm thinking here is it could be one or of two things. Obviously, it could be some sort of core issue. Your core could be weak. You could need to work on your transverse and your rectus abdominal and the obliques in that kind of a sense to make them somewhat tighter. But I don't know. Like, I'm curious. Obviously, if I saw a picture of you, this would be easier. But not seeing a picture of you, even though you put you can hold planks for 2 minutes or that you can do leg lifts holding weights and all that is very impressive, doesn't necessarily mean that you're doing them right, per se, in the sense of where it's all focused. So that doesn't really necessarily mean anything to you. When people say I can do planks for a long time, it doesn't mean anything to me until I actually see them do the planks. Or I understand very clearly that they know how to do planks properly because it's actually a very easy exercise to do wrong. But I'm inclined to maybe have a guess that you could have some sort of anterior tilt problem. And what usually happens with an anterior pelvic tilt is it can cause your stomach. And I see this a lot, especially with hairdressers or people that have jobs in which that they're on their feet a lot and they wear high heels or sometimes like women in service industries, Hooters. It can have this happen a lot, but basically it can make your stomach jut out from your hips more so than it would if you had a neutral alignment going on. And it can cause you to have somewhat of a belly look to you, even if you don't necessarily have fat issues to deal with. If you look up just pictures, if you type into Google, just for people listening, you can type in anterior pelvic tilt and you'll see demonstrations of a neutral spine and then an exaggerated lumbar spine. And you can see what it looks like in comparison, and you can check that out. To keep this quick, instead of going through a bunch of recommendations, there is an article. I just Googled it real quick. That's why I was stumbling a little bit while I was talking. There's an article from Mike Robertson that he released a while ago from T-Nation called Hips Don't Lie, Fixing Your Forced Couples. And it was a great article. It was an article I always loved by Mike. And it actually has a workout routine, if I remember correctly. I'm scanning while talking. It has a workout routine for an anterior tilt that you can do. And it talks about static stretching in certain areas, strengthening in other areas. And it gives you a little rundown about what a pelvic and an anterior tilt can kind of be like, how to train for it, how to rework your body to perhaps fix these issues. So you can look at that article. You can kind of give yourself an assessment and see if that's an issue. If that's not an issue, then you can always work on like vacuums. It's an abdominal exercise. You can work on getting stronger in the core and trunk area. But I would wonder if it wasn't something like that, if it wasn't more of a postural issue that is causing you to look more exaggerated in your stomach region than you actually are. So check out that article from Mike Robertson on T-Nation. Again, it is, let me scroll back up. It is Hips Don't Lie, Fixing Your Forced Couples. Mike Robertson, T-Nation, Google it. And I think that might help give you a little bit of a starting ground.
Fantastic article. And that was something that helped me when I had some hip issues back in college, like when I was, I don't know, back in 2007. So it's a couple years old.
Yeah, yeah. But it's always an article I liked a lot by him.
Fantastic article, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a good one to help people out if they're having issues with that.
Good stuff. And the reason why I mentioned that Lee should keep the answer quick is because we had a question very similar to that in the past. So I just wanted to bring it up so we could answer the question, but also make sure we answer new and exciting questions as well.
Yeah, sure, Kevin. Would you like me to ask the next question?
You know what? Sure. I mean, unless John's going to do it.
I don't think John's going to do it. John's in some new resort somewhere off having fun.
Drinking Cristal.
Yep. All right. So, hey, guys. I noticed that all of you, Lee, Kevin, and John, all have online clients. What are some tips you all use when working with online clients to ensure they are complying with your programs? The reason I ask is because I've recently begun working with clients in person, but would like to expand to working with online clientele as well. Any information would be great. Keep up a great show. P.S. Bring back the super shakes, Chris.
Do you remember that, Lee, the Super Shakes?
I was not a part of
with
it,
John K.
but
Williams?
I certainly did visit it in the past, yes.
Yeah, it fizzled out.
Wasn't there a Coke and whey protein experiment, if I remember correctly?
I did Diet Soda Shakes, yes.
Diet Soda.
I did not leave my house for about 24 hours, but the question that Chris has is really cool. A lot of what I do, I've learned from, you know, getting advice from John and Lee, really, and that is, you can never ask too many questions. Go as in-depth as humanly possible. Take lots of pictures. And something that I have all my clients do, I'm a huge stickler for form, and any of my in-person clients and online clients know that whenever I give them something, whether it be a deadlift or a bench or a chin-up, I always like to try to get videos of them doing the exercises to make sure that they're doing them correctly. If it's something that's more like a simpler exercise, like let's just say a bicep curl for the sake of it, I can usually trust them to be able to do that. But whether it's a lunge, a front squat, a back squat, a deadlift, a pull-up, a bench, even like a dumbbell bench, I usually like to try to get videos of them, especially if they have any kind of injury history. If they have any kind of shoulder history, they can compensate greatly when it comes to any kind of upper body movements. Same thing with lower body, and when you're dealing with the hips, knees, and ankles, or any kind of low back issues that they had previously or currently, you'll see incredible compensations when you actually look at their squat or their deadlift. And that's when I really make sure that we get those videos, just to be assured that they are not doing anything in the program that will prolong any kind of injury or instability or asymmetry that they have going on at the present time. That is one of the big things, because you have to keep in mind that you are dealing with someone that could be hundreds or thousands of miles away. They could live in another country. There could even be a language barrier. So whenever it comes to describing stuff, video is always king. And luckily, we're in a day and age where everyone has a video camera, whether it be a flip camera or on their phone. They can even lug their laptop with them. I have one client bring their laptop with them to the gym and film the exercises. You know, it's pretty simple. Just set it up on a box and hit record and go. So I think that's the big thing I would emphasize, because, you know, there's obviously going to be all the forms that have to be filled out, whether it be a health history, injury history, seeing where they're currently at statistically in terms of their weight, height, any kind of PRs that they've had in the past. I always like to get that to see where they are strength wise. And obviously you need to know what their goals are, whether it be for the next 4 weeks, 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, and make sure that you let them know whether those goals are realistic or not, and if that's something that can be obtained. And without going too much into this, there's lots of legal stuff that you have to make sure that you take care of, whether it be waivers to make sure that you will not be held responsible in case they get injured, and making sure that they have had a physical exam within the last year. There's a multitude of things, and I know Lee goes through a lot of this stuff, because she had me fill out a lot of this stuff a year ago, or a little bit more than a year ago. And definitely making sure that you're doing an extensive background check into what they have done in the past physically, and where they are health-wise and especially injury-wise. And you need to make sure that you are very specific in some things, especially when it comes to injuries, because some people might never tell you about some discomfort that they had in their shoulder or their knee because they figured they've had it for the last, you know, 2 years. So why, you know, there's, you know, not a reason to mention it because it's not, it's something they can work through, but it is something that absolutely has to be addressed, whether it's, you know, something like we were just talking about with anterior pelvic tilt issues, that can be a big issue when it comes to any kind of deadlifting or squatting and or lots of single leg work as well, because a lot of different things could be going on. It could be tight hip flexors. It could be really tight glutes. When we're dealing with the knee, it tends to be really tight quads or, you know, it could be alignment issues, lack of ankle mobility. Yeah. Exactly. So it can be a big, big ordeal. So there's all that stuff. That's before you write them a program. And generally, I like to give nutrition guidelines. And again, legally, you have to word it specifically. I am not a registered dietitian. I make sure I mention that. I am not a registered dietitian. I am not licensed to practice nutrition. So I make sure I mention that. And always making sure you are giving this client just as much attention as you would give be giving a client that's in person. So making sure you're able to answer all their emails, have videos of every single exercise that you're going to give them. Otherwise, that's, you know, that's going to be an issue. They're going to be emailing you about, how do I do this? How do I do this? They might find a video online of the exercise that you mentioned, but it is someone that has incredibly poor form and they're going to end up hurting themselves because they, like a great example is doing, you know, doing a back squat and completely losing the arch in your lumbar spine. Like, you know, little things like that can be really, really big issues. And you have to make sure that they're staying on top of that stuff as well. So I kind of went all over the place. Lee, feel free to fill in any holes that I missed.
No, I mean, you got everything. You really did. I like Kevin said, it's very extensive questioning. It's very extensive focus to detail, accountability, checking in. I totally agree with the video things. I always send my clients video examples of everything I can, along with cues. Because, you know, when you're in person, you can do little things. You can touch them in places, or you can tell them to make adjustments in places when they're doing something. You don't have that luxury. So where you can, try and I think it really helps to actually get better with your in-person training, if perfectly honest, because you learn how to communicate things because you don't have a choice but to communicate things. And you'll learn different kind of cues and different points and just tricks and tips to help them get through a movement and do it properly. I have literally a list of just cue after talking point about one exercise. I mean, for a plank, I have, you know, paragraph after paragraph of just different things that I can tell them to try and do it properly, where they can feel things, where they, you know, they might have a tendency to compensate, where they could have a tendency to be dominant, and then based upon their postural stance, where they might compensate or be dominant, where they might, you know, falter in just one exercise. And just for the sanity of yourself, keep a record and keep kind of a template. That way you're not constantly writing, you know, paragraph after paragraph after paragraph and taking a lot of time to do things. And it can help save you some time because online clients are way more time consuming than, in my personal opinion, than in-person clients in that sense. But before I even write a client a program, I've gotten detailed questionnaires and I've talked to them on the phone and when I can see video. So it's very involved and take it just as seriously as you do your in-person work. But Kevin, you nailed it. Way to go.
Yeah, and one thing I will quickly throw into that is I give all my online clients my personal cell phone number. So if there's anything that does come up, like I've had situations where they got to the gym and they completely forgot what a landmine was. So, you know, I have to just describe to them quickly, like whether it's a text message, whether it's a phone call, whether it's they are, you know, outside of a Dairy Queen and they need to be, you know, reminded that, you know, we have a goal that we have to try to attain and Dairy Queen is going to taste good for about 5 minutes. But once that's over, you're going to really regret it. And is it going to be worth, you know, the setback that you're going to gain from having a little bit of a, you know, I don't know what they make at Dairy Queen these days, whatever.
I've never been to a Dairy Queen.
What?
Okay. We only had one. In a very far away area from me, I've never been.
It's worth the
trip.
I've
been to Cold Stone. Yeah. They've made me uncomfortable and saying at me. But I've never been to Berry Green. Okay.
Interesting.
Let's just move on.
All right, so Lee, do you want to we skipped that first question from Blake?
Yeah, I noticed that. I just wasn't sure if you did on purpose. I'll ask it to you. Yeah.
No, I just started the questioning with you first.
Okay. Well, do you want me to ask you the question, Kevin?
Sure. Pronounce his last name too.
Okay, thank you so much. Kevin, I've been catching up with old podcasts from the beginning of the show. In the beginning, there was a lot of talk about body weight training. I'm just curious. I'm just coming off of a break from working out because I was sidelined with mono. I want to focus on body weight training because I want to improve my strength with my body weight before grabbing weights in the gym. Any recommendations on the best program? Thanks and love the show. It helps me through a lot of the grind at work. Blake... something. Blake V. Blake V.
All right. That's the, okay.
That's all you're getting.
All right. So, Blake, I mean, it's a really good question, and it's interesting. I once had mono in high school and kind of went through the same thing, but, you know, I'm going to give you some bodyweight stuff to do, but I want to quickly say, just because you're coming off of, you know, a lot of time where you haven't been training or your body is still kind of recovering, that doesn't mean you can't pick up weights. You might not want to go into the bench and start doing heavy singles every single day, but that doesn't mean you can't go in, start doing your dumbbell benches, doing some light lunges, stuff like that. You know, you don't have to just stick with bodyweight training, but I'm going to, you know, me, I have an imagination. I'm going to pretend that you have, you know, you train at a gym and you don't want to start your gym membership up again until you can really get at it. So here's some bodyweight stuff that you can do at home. Simply, this is without any equipment. Start doing your push-ups. Start working your way up to sets of 15. Go with walking lunges or split squats, depending on where you're at with strength. That will deal with your lower body. Do lots of muscle activation. Do the little things right now that you might not always give yourself the time to do when you go into the gym because you're running around. Focusing on glute activation, like you can start doing hip lifts, single-legged hip lifts, Cook hip lifts. You can always work on your mobility with scapular wall slides if you have foam roller. Make sure you got your foam rolling all done. All the little things, I would say, make sure you get those things done before you sign back off your gym membership. I'm getting this kind of hypothetical, but also, if you're willing to invest a couple bucks, I think an iron gym is a fantastic piece of equipment. You can use it not only to do chin-ups, but you know, there's attachments, so you can do some abdominal stuff. You can attach a TRX to it. To be honest, I attach my TRX to my iron gym, and it works phenomenally. I can do like single arm rows and stuff on it.
I do that too.
Yeah, it's stable, and it, you know, you don't have to risk pulling your door. Or messing up your door, buying the door attachment if you just have this straight up TRX. So those are a couple of things you can start doing. But work on the basic movement patterns again. And you know, if you want to get some equipment, get an iron gym, get a couple bands. You can start doing some band rows. You can do X band walks. You can do some bodyweight single legged deadlifts. Again, all these little things that will get you ready. So when you go back and you hit the weights, you're going to have all your a lot of your activation work done, and you make sure you're not starting up again with severe deficiencies in any kind of stability or mobility. Lee, what's up?
Yeah, no, very good, very good. And yeah, just if they're out there, I like the point you made about the weights, because I find, and I was just talking about this recently, I find that, you know, body weight training is, it's very challenging. And in some ways, especially if you're coming into any sort of from a weakened condition, mm-hmm. it can be more challenging to me than weights. With weights, you can move up in intervals. You can't just remove your leg.
Exactly.
You can't just, you know what I mean? You can't remove certain parts or decrease weight in certain areas. And you usually find that progressions could be made safer and faster with the addition of weights. So certainly don't be unopen to the idea of that. But yeah, you listed a lot of great exercises, and you know, I love body weight training. But the first Lean Being program that I released for the members was complete body weight training with also use of suspension trainers. And I love both of them, and everything you mentioned is stuff that I have and stuff that I do. So
I just found a green bean on my desk from earlier today.
Ooh.
Oops. I didn't eat it.
That was an overshare. Well, that's good. I would have not.
All right. Here, I have a good question from Zachary. It says, hey, guys, first off, I'm a huge fan of the podcast. I love how you guys take all the topics of fitness that us fitness enthusiasts love and then apply your offbeat personality to make learning fun and more a part of my daily routine. I'm a competitive natural bodybuilder, and I love it when you guys start talking in depth about nutrition science and when Lee goes all sexy nerd on us. What is that? Is that like Steve Urkel's girlfriend from Family Matters?
Would that be like Urkel?
Remember her?
No.
She actually wasn't bad looking, but she ended up dying. She died. Anyways, I love it if you guys could have some more discussions that pertain to contest preparation. I know a lot of other natural bodybuilders that listen to the podcast regularly and would appreciate your knowledge applied to their sport a bit. Maybe you could get some of the more intelligent people in the field on the show for some roundtable discussion. Dr. Joe Clem, Lee, do you know that last name?
Yeah, good luck. Okay. I know the next three.
Me too. Alan Aragon, Lyle McDonald, and Lane Norton are just some of the names that would be awesome to hear from. Keep it up and continue to be the blank. He means the S word. But I already said the BS word, but I'm not going to say it twice because you don't want to BS a BSer. All right. So the first thing I want to say is Alan Aragon's been on the podcast. What's up?
Yeah. Yep.
Back episodes.
Yeah, he should come on again too.
Lee, I don't know if you have better ties, but I've been harassing him. I've tried.
Well, when it's towards the end of the month, there's nothing you can do.
Yeah, I know.
Like there's no getting in touch with the man when it's towards the end of the month.
But I think, you know, Zach makes a good point. I you know, it would be cool to talk a little bit more about natural bodybuilding. But guess who's on next week?
Oh,
what?
Tom Venuto.
What?
Yeah.
What's he?
He's a natural bodybuilder.
What, Zach? I'm hooking you up, son.
A very good one at that. And yeah, I know that generally. I think, you know, kind of what he's probably talking about is what we cover on the show and what, you know, Tom usually talks about and stuff too is more
general, I guess,
basic
loss,
level. Right. Yeah, general fat loss. Like, we don't go into things like super compensation or how to manipulate water or things like that. Which, I mean, I talk about. I know how to do. You know, the water manual
maybe
that I
wrote
for Fat Loss Troubleshoot.
Like a round table.
Yeah, maybe we could. Maybe we could do like a round table on like the best, because I have my preferred methods for water manipulation. But, you know, and it's, you know, sodium loading or depletion, carb loading and depletion, stuff like that. That's probably what he's talking about.
Hell yeah.
You know, how to do like aesthetic training, how to do symmetry work with bodybuilding and stuff like that. It's a topic that I feel it's one of my favorite topics to discuss.
Then I think we should do it next week.
This is such an athletic-based show, usually. Sometimes, you know, or more functional training, I guess. You know, for the most part, there's not a lot of bodybuilding talk.
I think it would be interesting for even, like, our general listeners who are, you know.
No, definitely. I'm down for
weekend
warriors.
All right, let's, I mean, we got Eric next week. Then we got Tom Venuto. And then maybe we can talk about it next week with Eric, and then he'll get 2 weeks, or maybe we'll talk about it, you know, instead of doing a mailbag, and then we'll have the interview with Eric, and then we'll just have some bitchin' shows for you guys in the next couple of weeks.
Some geeky talk about water and symmetry and posing.
Are you allowed to mention that you train the situation? You've been doing his program, right?
That.
I mean, that's why he always mentioned Jersey
totally
Shore. She's always trying to get
totally
people to
watch that. Totally blowing my
cover, bro. I was going to say, you and John. John's been helping him do his.
Well, that's where John is right now. You know that.
Oh, crap. Never mind. Let's edit that out.
Yeah, you got to edit that.
All right.
No, you know what? Leave it in. Oh, you got to edit that. You have to edit that out, because I don't need any hate mail this week, Kevin. My heart's getting fragile.
All right.
Just make noises like a cow. Something.
Can I write that down at least? Hold on. 24. All right. So the next question that I have for you, Lee, comes from Nick. He says, and I also have to give a shout out to all of our Australian listeners. Like, I mentioned that we were going to be getting some extra questions on Facebook and Twitter. And then, like, in 5 minutes later, I get four people from Australia.
Yeah. So what's up? Australia and what did they say? It was in their workroom, like their break room or something?
Yeah, and they when they have meals, they just chill out and they talk about the podcast.
That's awesome. Well, what's up?
So you know what? I'm going to do this right now because, you know, it's kind of like a brush with fame. I'm going to say what's up to Carl Morse, Daniel Camilleri, and Tim Watson, and Shane Hubbard, even though he's not from Australia.
Do it anyway.
What's up? Brush with fame. Brush with fame. I thought that was cool. It's from another podcast I listened to. So, yeah, okay. Hi, Kevin, Lee, and John. I've been listening to you for a while now over here in New Zealand, so not necessarily Australia, but it reminded me of it. So, constantly inspired by the podcast and saturated with great info on training and everything related. Wow, you're breathing into the mic. My question.
Yeah, I know. I didn't mean to. Sorry. Go ahead.
It's all right. My question is all about nutrition. I'm 39-year-old male, 183 centimeters, 90 kilograms, which converts to 192.6 pounds. For you fellas, I train up to 6 times per week, usually 3 days on weights and 3 days on a Concept 2 rower, which is my true passion, up to 30K a week. I am one of those unfortunate people attempting to put on lean muscle and not too much fat at the same time. Anyway, get on with the question. To get on with a question, what would you consider a good pre-workout meal snack? Should they be the same for the weight days as I row? I tend to use protein drinks following weight workout days and not follow my cardio row days. Should I eat the same for all the days? And on a rest day, should I be trying to eat the same or less given no workout going on? On weight days, I'm doing heavy at the moment, 1 hour sessions, including abs, all done at home as I have 4 daughters, a wife, and a job. To use your statement this way, I'm getting the most bang for my buck. Row days usually are 30 to 40 minutes of interval training. Once again, love the podcast. Keep it up. A TRX is the next on my list of equipment. Cheers from Nick. Nice. A couple questions in there.
Okay, let's see. What do I want to cover first? I guess the first thing we'll talk about is it's a common thing that people want to switch up their pre-workout training nutrition versus doing cardio or weightlifting, like strength training based training or like cardio training. Since he's doing the 30 to 40 minutes of interval training on a rower and about an hour of lifting, I would say if you look at it from like a depletion standpoint, it's not going to be extremely far off from one another. It's not as if that there's a big difference between what you're going to get there as far as any sort of depletion. I mean, sure, we can get really, really technical, but I think that you're going to find that you're going to want the same kind of energy prehand and the same kind of recovery post. Being that you're working on maintaining your lean muscle as much as possible while trying to lose fat or even potentially increase muscle on a slight level, depending on your status and where you're at, I think that it would be very wise to any training session put protein before and after. And I think that it's a common misconception to ignore protein when we do cardio or to even, you know, somewhat lower protein on rest days. I'm kind of a big believer in keeping protein pretty steady just in general and not putting it in or making it any sort of a special focus just because you're training or just because you're doing strength training. Recovery happens long after you put those weights down. And just pre or post isn't going to be nearly as important as all the other time, especially if you're doing something like cardio, which can have a tendency to you know, become somewhat catabolic depending upon how long it's been since you've eaten, how hard you go, how depleted you get, etc. So I would say, as a general basic strategy and to keep it somewhat simple, to yes, put the same kind of pre and post-workout nutrition before strength training and before cardio, especially in the situation that he is in, trying to increase lean gains as much as possible and to maintain lean muscle. And if he's trying to lose fat a little bit. In general, too, I'm not a fan of fasted workouts. It's not like they aren't done or they can't be done or I've never done them with clients. But generally speaking, especially not knowing how someone responds to it and not really knowing too much information about them, I think the safest way to go is to always do a pre-workout nutrition as well. As far as what and the stats of what you use for your pre-workout nutrition or what it is exactly to eat, you know, I hate to say the phrase that everyone loves to hear from me. It does depend upon what your diet setup is somewhat looking like. The easiest way to go is to simply do somewhere around 15 grams of protein, 30 grams of carbohydrates, 5 grams of fat. Like, it's such a classic staple. It's kind of your go-to, no-fail, very generic pre-workout, post-workout nutrition staple. There's nothing wrong with it. It's more than likely going to cover everything that you need and going to make your pre- and post-workout situation okay, and to go liquid as well with that, either with milk or with a protein shake, be it with something like, you know, protein powder and some water, or a protein powder with sugar, actual sugar or dextrose or whatever you want to put in there, you can put in there, but it's kind of your classic staple. You can drink that before and then you can drink it after and then have your solid meals. I like solid meals. I'm always going to like solid meals. I'm always going to be a proponent of solid meals. So where you can have a solid meal, I would rather that be in place. I usually like using shakes or drinks for that insurance emergency fix, you know, just to make sure that you have everything that you have. Let's have the pre-workout shake. Let's have the post-workout shake. Let's get that in. It's kind of locking in your nutrition, making sure you have those very definite things in place. I know I'm getting at least around my workout, you know, this like 30 grams of protein and you know, I'm going to be set. I'm going to be good. I'm going to be kind of taken care of. It helps when you're really concerned about muscle retention and energy and not getting too exhausted, especially when working on lean gains programs, because it's such a delicate line you're somewhat treading. You don't want to really make any mistakes there. You want to make every single thing count. I don't believe in going extremely low carb, especially when you're trying to make gains. It doesn't really make a lot of sense. So making sure the carbohydrates are in place as well is important. They're going to help you with your energy. They're going to help with your recovery, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a very simplistic, basic kind of a thing to follow. And I think for the purposes of this question, that answer works well. I could ramble on and on. Maybe that's something we'll say for the bodybuilding talk roundtable or whatnot, and getting to more things like that, especially.
Oh, snap, a teaser.
Yeah, a little bit of teaser there. So for now, I'll keep it as simple as that for a generic recommendation that works well for the majority of the population.
And what's up, Mike Robertson? Any loss today? How's it going? Anyways, let's go to the next question that we have.
You just snuck that in.
I didn't realize that they lost until now. I had ESPN.com opening.
Okay, so how about I read this one? What, from Michelle from Calgary?
Sure. I like that one.
Yeah. That one? Okay.
I agree.
Okay. For Kevin, hello, FitCast. I have a question about training and eating to get stronger. I'm a 39-year-old female who has been training seriously for 4 years, but even before that, I had always worked out, just not as smartly as I should have been. As with the majority of women, I have always concentrated more on the aesthetics part of working out and dieting. Any strength gains I have achieved were icing on the cake. But as I'm getting older, my ideas of what looks good and why I'm in the gym and working my butt off have changed. I'm excited about getting stronger and looking healthier and fit than what I see the scale say. I have started using the 531 program. I want to know if I eat at maintenance on lifting days and just below on rest or cardio days, if this will help me with my recomposition that I would like to achieve. Will it hinder my strength gains that I would be able to get if I don't eat in a surplus? Also, how much cardio on the 531 program would be too much? I don't love cardio, but I do try to get 2 or 3 sessions of intervals in per week, 30-minute sessions. Makes running for the bus a bit easier. I'm 5'6". I weigh 155, probably around 25 body fat. I could lose 15 pounds, but I'm getting tired of dieting. I would like to get stronger, not overly concerned with losing weight, but I also don't want to put on any weight either. Thank you for the advice. I enjoy listening to podcasts as I walk my dog, Michelle from Calgary.
All right, so we have a couple different questions in there, and it is a really cool question. It brings me back. I just got a new client at Boyle's, and she came in and she says, I want to look like Kate Beckinsale. I want to look strong, and that was awesome. So Tony Gentilcore, you're winning some wars out there. Let's just go right down the list. So doing 5-3-1, eating at maintenance on your lifting days or below, eating at maintenance, I promise you will gain strength. Eating below maintenance, let's just say 500 calories below maintenance, you will still continue to get stronger. That depends, again, there's the word depends, on what your conditioning is like and what you're doing on the off days. If you're just... For people out there who don't know, 5-3-1 is a program that Jim Wendler put together. It can be done on a 3-day-a-week or a 4-day-a-week program. For the heck of it, I'm just going to pretend like you're doing the 4-day-a-week program because that is what people are generally doing when they do 5-3-1. So you can absolutely be in a small deficit and still continue to get stronger. If you're in a 1,000 or 1,500 calorie deficit, especially with how brutal that program can be, if you're doing it to the T, your body will probably break down before you see really good gains. The issue with that is you are doing 3 main sets of your primary exercise, with that last set being as many reps as possible, along with 2 accessory exercises that tend to be in the general same ballpark of what you did for the first exercise. So let's just say, for example, if you were benching, you may be doing dips and you may also be doing some kind of like incline dumbbell bench. Those are 3 things that you would do, and they generally tend to be high rep. And again, once you have to keep in mind that you're going really high in terms of the percentages of your 1 rep max for those lifts. You're either doing 5 reps, 3 reps, or 1 rep. And then for that last set, like I said, you're doing as many reps as you possibly can at that certain percentage. It varies what you're going to be using in terms of percentage, and the weight obviously is going to vary. You go by the manual if you're really interested. I think if you want to do something like that, Jim deserves the money to, I think it's a really good manual. But in terms of the conditioning, you said you don't love cardio and that you're doing 2-3 sessions of intervals per week for 30-minute sessions. And I don't know if I talked to this about this before, but if you're doing like high-intensity interval training for 30 minutes, you're not doing high-intensity interval training. You're not going to last for 30 minutes if you're going at at the intensity you're supposed to be. High-intensity interval training, I like to put that in the ballpark of a sprint at about 90%, with 100% being Freddy Krueger's chasing you or whatever your worst nightmare is, whether it be, some people really don't like clowns, so you can think of that as your example. But think of it as a 90% to 95% all out. Think of like a prowler push or an uphill sprint. A bike sprint is a great safe way to do your interval training, and it allows you to go all out. You should literally have almost nothing in the tank at the end of that period, whether it be a 10-second, 15-second, 20, 25, or a 30-second interval. We get into the same argument when it comes to Tabatas, whether people are doing them correctly or not. But to be honest, with interval training with my clients, the only reason, and this is actually a big discussion on the Strength Coach forums a couple weeks ago, there's a huge debate about interval training because, actually, I don't know if I talked about this on the podcast last time, but there's a big discussion on interval training, on whether it's whether it's beneficial or not, whether people should just be doing steady state or if they should be doing interval training. And the reason why I do interval training with my clients is because they're going to be in the gym for 2 to 3 hours per week tops. All right. These are, you know, people that generally aren't going to be going out of their way to getting in to get extra exercise because they have families or they work 60 hours a week or they just don't want to do any extra exercise than they really need to. So that's when I use intervals, because I can get them on the bike for 10 minutes, have them bust their ass, and, you know, hopefully burn an extra 50 or 100 calories over the course of the next 24 hours if you want to look into the whole EBOC thing. God, I'm going off on a tangent right now, but I'm sorry. But in terms of the cardiovascular stuff, I kind of agree with what Jim says in the book. If you're going to be doing 5-3-1, doing something like a sled push or some short uphill sprints or some bike sprints, like 10 minutes tops of total interval training, whether that be just a nice 2-to-1 rest-to-work ratio of 30 seconds on and 60 seconds off, making sure you're going all out. When you're in a deficit and you're adding on all this extra cardio, those are extra calories that you're not going to have when it comes to muscle repair and making sure you can actually function in day-to-day life without falling apart completely. I would say 2 sessions is probably going to be enough if you keep your nutrition in check and you get in as much, you know, like Lee talks about, get in as much NEPA, non-exercise physical activity as possible, whether that be walking your dog. That's awesome. Take your dog for a 45-minute walk in your off days. Phenomenal. That's a great way to get started. Again, you know, when Lee can talk about this a little bit more, but when you're dealing with the actual calories, you can't go too low. Otherwise, you're just going to break down and you're not going to be able to recover in time for that next session and you're not going to get stronger. You're either going to stay where you are or you're going to get weaker. So generally what I do with my clients when I want to get specific, and you know, I only have probably 2 of my clients that want to get stronger. All the rest of them want fat loss, but you tend to, when you get do fat loss, you tend to gain strength as well, as long as you can program it correctly. But with my 2 strength strength clients that want to also lose weight, but strength is a big component of it, I have them at about a 500 calorie a day deficit, and they continue to get stronger week after week after week. And whether it's a 1% increase or a 2.5% increase in weight, that can be a pretty big deal from week to week, especially when it's someone that's been training for 6 months to a year. So you got to keep that in mind. You're not going to get drastically stronger, but I do think I like 5-3-1. I think it's a good program. I talked to Lee about this in the past. Probably not a great fat loss program, but if you don't mind staying at the weight where you are, going at a 500 calorie deficit, it'll probably help you lose a little bit of weight as long as you keep that nutrition in check throughout the week and there's no major refeed days or cheat days or anything like that. I'm sorry I rambled, but Lee, what else you got?
No. I think some people think, when we talked about this before, I remember a complaint that I got. I can't remember where it was from. Someone said that I was wrong to say that it wasn't a fat loss program, or like it wouldn't be a good fat loss program.
Well,
they
wrote an article that made it a fat loss program and a lead. That's probably why.
Okay. And my here was my complaint. I believe in kind of more specific programming, and to what degree you said, you know, when I want to get specific, you kind of get specific. And I think 5-3-1 is a great program. And can you lose weight using 5-3-1? Sure. Yeah, I think you can. Do I think that how it now, granted, I only read it once. I'm not like engulfed in 5-3-1 like mania. I'm not a follower of the program. I've never done it. But everyone that I know that has done it usually say that it's pretty intense. They say that it's pretty recovery heavy. It really busts you because it's such a strong strength gaining program. And I think that for the purposes of gaining strength, it's great. I think for the purposes of trying to push your body to the ultimate limits and go into a deficit, I think there's smarter ways to lose fat than that, just in my personal opinion, than that program, that is made specifically for gaining strength on a very intense big gains kind of a level. I mean, that's a very heavy program. At least, you know, the way it's generically written, you can alter it. Sure, you can alter the program. You can take less days. You can kind of play around with the volume, basically, and then make it a little bit more comparable to eating less if you wanted to eat less on somewhat of a larger level. If you're eating at a small, say, 300, 500 calorie deficit level, which is usually a 300 level is great for recomp. You know, because you mentioned it was, you know, you kind of wanted to do recomposition. And recomposition kind of means to bounce in between deficit, maintenance, and perhaps surplus. It's kind of what the lean gain system is about a little bit. You know, or culking, or whatever else anyone's going to call it over the next couple years, because it's certainly going to be called many things. But basically, you know, somewhat of that is you get a little fat loss, you get a little muscle gain. If you cycle right with your nutrition, if you cycle right with the program that you're doing, you should receive maximum benefits. If you're really concerned with recomp, you know, here, I guess my concern is you're 5'6", 155, body fat saying 25%. That seems a little high for 5'6", and 155, but I don't know what your muscle is. If you're really not looking to lose fat, then fine, don't lose fat. And just work on eating at maintenance, gaining your strength, and then maybe jumping back into it later. I guess what kind of jumped out at me at this question is I hear frustration with this question a little bit. You know, you kind of say you're tired of dieting, you don't want to do it anymore. And I'm a very firm believer in is if that's the case, then stop doing it. As far as dieting down goes, stop. Just knock it off. Stop doing it. You're just going to frustrate yourself. And doing a program like this, I don't see why, unless that you started going into an extreme calorie deficit, that you're going to see any large or quickly noticeable results in any sort of weight loss. I think that it would probably be better if you're someone that's been yo-yoing and bouncing to simply eat at maintenance, lift hard, and go for it. You can cycle if you want to. That's great. But I guess the kind of hidden psychology agenda of this question leads me to say that I think it might be time for you to just kind of take a break and to just lift and decide that when you do want to work towards fat loss, to work towards fat loss, and you can certainly maintain your strength by doing that. But as a recomp program, it's good for strength. I have no idea what it would really be like in sense of muscle gain on any sort of large level or changing any sort of aesthetics like that. Did you put on a lot of muscle when you did this program, Kevin? Is that a curiosity?
I got strong as, you know, in the 1 month I got pretty damn stronger.
Yeah. I've heard, you know, some people, cause I can't remember what the rest times are.
I think it is like, you know, 90 seconds.
90 seconds or so. Yeah. Cause I can't remember the specifics of the program, but I guess my point is there's a lot of bouncing around in the question, and I won't ramble and go on and on, but you know, you kind of make a point to say that you don't really know if you want to eat in a surplus, you don't want to lose weight, or you don't really care if you lose weight, but you don't really want to gain it either. I always get nervous when I see women, especially women who seem to be frustrated with their body, where their body is at, say the things that you were saying. So I guess my point is really analyze why you're doing the program. If it's truly for strength reasonings and you want to take a diet break, then enjoy that diet break. Get in the gym, lift, go hard. Your body will thank you on a program like this for keeping it close to the maintenance anyway. And then you can kind of toy around and do somewhat a little bit of a less volume heavy 5-3-1 and maybe just kind of play around with how many days a week you do it or you know, mess with things like that and perhaps guide it more towards fat loss as your calories kind of get less and less. So that's all I was, you know, going to say, but I think I said it in a very long-winded and non-composed manner. But
I just went CSI on that. That's good.
Yeah.
And also, don't forget that you know, if you're losing weight, at least your chin-up numbers will go up.
Absolutely. Good point. Good point.
It's a lifting joke.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Lee, I got a question from Mike. It's a long mailbag.
Yeah, and I just sent you a message about that.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
It's probably because it says I'm unavailable, Lee. I'm doing something right now.
Okay. Well, I'm talking to you, Kevin, so I thought to me you were available.
All right. Well, let's go to the next question from Steve Beck. I wonder if he's the singer Beck. Probably not. It's late. Hey guys, really love your podcast. Great information. I feel like, and I like the variety in the show. I'm prepping for my ACSM CBT certification and wondering how you or the industry sees the certification. I'm basically pursuing a third career and want something to give me some credibility as I try to break into the fitness world. I've been working out hard for the past 16 years and have a lot of accumulated knowledge, but I want the cred behind it so that I can better serve folks. Right now, I run a blog and have started a fitness podcast on my own, mainly targeted toward people looking to improve their strength and sports performance. Any advice that I could, any advice you could give an up and comer? Thanks, and I appreciate your time, Steve. We're not going to answer this question because it's a competitor early. That was a dog.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Okay, yeah.
My dog always barks. I'm kidding. We can do this, right?
Yeah, I guess. Whatever. We'll help you get more hits on your blog or whatever.
Well, let's talk.
I'm sorry. Hold on.
Well, I'm going to start. I will talk about the ACSM certification. Basically, when we've talked about certifications in the past, and Steve, I really recommend you go into our back catalog and check out. We actually had a quite extensive discussion on certifications, and we had a similar mailbag question. I don't know the exact episode. It was probably about 15 or 20 episodes ago, but remember it being pretty good. So go back and try to check that out. So the in terms of the ACSM CPT, not a bad certification. Again, it gets your foot in the door. You know, to be honest, I think Lee is going to say the same thing. The NASM CPT is probably a couple notches above that. And then the NSCA also has their CPT and CSCS. But if you haven't taken it already and you haven't invested too much time into studying for the certification, I'd probably just go for the NASM CPT. Some great stuff in there as well. And it covers a wide range of stuff from strength training to nutrition. And it is probably the best certification for up-and-comers right now, unless you need some kind of specific certification for a job that you want to acquire. Like the CSCS is obviously for strength and conditioning. So that's why I went out and grabbed that. And it tends to also encompass all the information that is in their CPT certification as well. It's just kind of like a little bit added on top of that for strength and conditioning. So that's what I would do. But, you know, if you love this industry and you love to train people and you are a people person, give it a shot. I mean, what's the worst that you can, that can happen? Find yourself a good gym to start working at and, you know, bust your butt by starting to read everything you can get your hands on and watching some DVDs. My voice just cracked at 24 years old. But the one thing I would definitely look at in terms of books and DVDs to just get started and get accustomed to what you're going to need to be doing with your clients is, number one, check out Assess and Correct. Awesome DVD with Mike Robertson, Bill Hartman, and Eric Cressy. Number two, I would say check out Inside Out, which is a foam rolling warm-up DVD for the upper body. Nick Tuminello has a bunch of great DVDs. I was actually just watching one on joint safe training.
Excellent, excellent, excellent.
Yeah, it's really good stuff, and it's something that is – it should be – to be honest, a prerequisite before you touch clients or give clients anything to do. You should watch that DVD because this will probably clear up a lot of the things that are going to come up in terms of like knee pain or low back pain or shoulder pain and how to kind of work around them and still get results with your clients. And in terms of books, you know, for strength and conditioning, I do think New Rules of Lifting is a good place to start. It's a cheap book. It's like $12 for programming, for strength training. I think Eric's Maximum Strength is a good place to start in terms of the philosophy for building strength programs. And then for nutrition, you know, not to kiss ass right now, but I don't think you can go wrong with checking out Fat Loss Troubleshooting Body by Eats. It really helps you kind of get the ball rolling when it comes to how to talk about nutrition with your clients. And Lee especially dealt with it in Body by Eats, kind of like figuring out what is going to be the best you know, what's going to be the best diet for your client, depending on what their life is like, what their personality is like. And, you know, the, I mean, those are a couple things to kind of get you going. Because, you know, Lee, I mean, I know I get this question a lot with people that come into Boyles and they're kind of like observing, or they're interns and like, oh, you know, what should I do to kind of get, you know, to be a great trainer? Like, you just kind of have to start at the bottom and work your way up with the books, because and the DVDs, because there's so much stuff out there now. Everyone has new products coming out every single week, and you can very easily just get buried in it. You can just get lost. So I always, you know, give them a couple books and DVDs that they should check out initially, and then they can move on to more specific stuff. If they find they want to work with, you know, here's an example, you want to work with baseball players, check out Eric's shoulder DVD. You know, if you find that you want to do more body composition stuff, you know, go in that direction and check out some of Tom Venuto's stuff too. You can do, kind of figure out where you want to go after you get your foot in the door and you figure out what kind of clients you want to work with and what kind of clients want to work with you, honestly, because you're not going to be able to pick your clients when you start. You basically take whatever you can get so you can make sure that check comes in every single week. Lee, what would you add on top of that?
I mean, yeah, obviously you covered it. Field work, field work, field work, education, education, education.
Yeah.
And I think recently, I think it's because to some degree, I guess more popular in the field or whatever, but I've been getting a lot of emails, or more so than normal, about what I do, how I stay at the, you know, head of things, or how, where I get my education. And most people, what they say in the email is, how can I do it for the lowest cost possible? And all I can tell you is that it's not cheap to stay educated.
Yeah.
And that's something you're just going to have to deal with. And if you, it's an investment. And the only reason I bring it up is because a lot of people, and this is in no way a cut to the person that asked the question, but a lot of people, they start a blog, they, you know, they get a certification,
YouTube
they
page.
Train a few, they train a few people, and then, you know, the next thing you know, they're where's my notoriety, where's my, you know, respect, whatever. And don't get me wrong, I'm a very like starter fast, you know, I want to move. You know, when I started though, it was day and night. Every person I get my hands on, any information I could get my hands on, I have spent tens of thousands of dollars.
Nerd alert, guys, this is what we're talking about.
On DVDs, on studies, on workshops, on
and you're talking
I've even paid to have a client. I have paid people to let me work with them. In the beginning, I did. In the beginning, I gave people money. And you do what you have to do to get where you need to get as far as the education goes, because without the education, and don't get me wrong, like, can people with good personalities and good bodies get somewhere with it? Sure, but they'll never have respect. At the end of the day, they'll never have respect, and it'll fade eventually when their body fades, and it's all they'll have. And you really have to go there with the education, because it is the only thing. Anybody can be an expert. Anybody can have a blog. Anybody can do any of those things that they want to do. The only thing that is going to separate you now are the people that are willing to go for it as far as the knowledge and the education, and to really give it their all. And if you're not ready to do that, and if you're not really to sit, I mean, I have spent just boring, boring hours reading things I did not want to read. But it's what you have to do sometimes. And I read things I love to read too, don't get me wrong, but I don't like statistics. And there's a lot of things that I don't like reading. I don't like to read a lot of studies. They're not fun. They're long. They're very worded. And it's not fun sometimes. And sometimes I've been at workshops or seminars and I've just wanted to die. It was, you know, because it just, you get tired of it sometimes. But you have to keep doing it, and it ends up paying off. And if you really love it, it's only a few times that it's so tiring and it's so, you know, boring. Most of the time it's very exciting. Don't get me wrong. But sometimes you have to do the things you don't want to do, and you have to spend the money that you don't necessarily want to spend. But if you have to make a choice between your daily Starbucks or going out to dinner and buying really expensive meals that are going to last one's time in your stomach versus education that is going to last years in your internal vault and with clients, make that decision. And that's really, I guess, all I can say. Like, for example, the Nick Tumanella DVD, it was excellent. And the reason I liked it so much is because it really helped show you how to regress a client or the change in exercise for a client if they're having some sort of issue with their knees or their hips or whatnot or their back. And it, in my opinion, was something really good for trainers to learn how to not be so egotistical and make them do an exercise. You know, it's all funny and everything and forums and articles and people are like, oh, well, you don't call it a back squat. It's just a squat, or you don't do this, you know, and all these things about just suck it up. You know, it's kind of hard to say suck it up to say a 45-year-old mom who has really bad knees and who is new into training that just wants to get healthy again. That's where suck it up doesn't really belong anymore.
Speaking of sucking, how about John Bass?
I know, right?
Sorry, I had to cut him because John's got to leave really quickly. But
what up, babe? What up, John?
Leon, miss.
I miss you, babe. I know.
Hey.
See?
Shut up, Kevin.
I don't want to talk anymore. Okay. I just want to talk to John.
Whoa. All right, that's the end of this week's episode. Check us out on iTunes.
Anyway, I'll finish.
1 minute, and we already got a title.
Right?
What's the title?
John's swag.
No, that's not what I thought you said.
John's talking to us on his gold laptop.
Yeah, you are. Which private jet are you on now?
I'm not. I'm in Egypt.
Oh, you lucky SOB. I hate you so much, man. I mean, you've earned it, but don't get me wrong. You get to see pyramids.
I said private jet. You were on one.
Yeah.
It's not like I was even being funny.
John actually messaged me about 50 minutes ago and asked to come on, and I didn't see it because I had my do not disturb thing. That's why you send me text messages, John, or an email.
Yeah, and I'm in Egypt. I'm not paying the bill for
internet.
You.
John, you had exhibit pimp your phone.
Yeah, whatever. All right, I got it, Ron.
All right, see you, John.
Love, kisses.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for flying.
Bye-bye.
Peace and hair grease.
Okay. So that was Jonathan Fass of acceleratedstrength.com. He never uses the website, so.
No point in even going to it.
No points.
And, you know, I think, if anything, it's a perfect example of why education and working hard will end up getting you somewhere. John didn't even update his damn blog.
Yeah. He's, you know,
and look what he's doing now.
That's the John is the 1 minute man when he comes on the Fitcast.
Yep. Oh, he's going
to
get you for that one.
Boom, boom, boom. Show me what you got.
I'm going to end my rant.
I don't want no
now.
1 minute, man.
I think that's it.
All right, cool. We've been recording for 2 hours, but,
yeah, I'm done.
Cool. Do we have time for another?
Mm-mm.
Okay, yeah, I get a pee.
Because there's food with my name on it, and it's time.
What are you having, like, alphabet soup?
You're really funny there.
Aren't I a winner, Lee?
You are a winner.
I'm pretty much a winner.
You're a winner. And I'm having actually, it's like this rice bean corn stir-fry thing with fresh parsley, and it's really good. And some paprika, and it's yummy. You'd like it, Kevin.
I'm gonna have eggs and broccoli. I've been doing like this thing. I'd use like tons of broccoli in my omelets now. I don't know why. It tastes really good.
It gives good texture. I put broccoli in a lot of things like that. It's a great texture adder. So I can be down with that.
Nutrition tips with Lee Peel.
Yeah, broccoli. It gives you texture.
Gives you texture.
I'm gonna get an award for that one.
That's the free one.
They're gonna
one.
Be leaving all kinds of reviews. Like, oh my god, it was episode 192. Lee said this thing about broccoli. I just blown my mind.
The texture is just unbelievable. That's the thing. Like Angelina Jolie. So let's wrap this up. Please don't forget to submit questions for Eric Cressy and Tom Venuto. You can send them to questions@thefitcast.com, or you can go to thefitcast.com and click on the Contact Us page and send them in that way. Excuse me, I'm going to burp because I had seltzer water. All right. And you can also go to iTunes and please subscribe to the Fitcast. Come on. We got some new rivals. We got like that Biggest Loser stuff. Like a Biggest Loser fan podcast is beating us now, guys. See, we got to represent. I'm talking like those Aussies. They're representing. I need the Americans representing. I need the, you know, my Brits to be representing. All you guys out in Germany, even the Turks, you got to be representing. All right? The Turks. Even though we beat you in basketball today. So you can do all that stuff. You can check out thefitcast.com where you can download this podcast. I'll probably be blogging at some point at kevinlarabia.com. And you can check out Lee's stuff at leepeel.com. And until next week, I don't know, Lee. What am I going to watch? Fast and Furious or Resident Evil Apocalypse? I don't know.
Fast and Furious.
Boom, 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 boom.
But you can't Tokyo. Sing the music of the second. No. You can't sing the music of the third one while you're getting ready to watch the fourth one.
Fast and Furious.
Okay. I'm in Mamiya.
If you're Tokyo, if you mean it, then you mean if you what is it? If you mean it, then you mean it, then you know you have to go. Fast and Furious. See you next week.
What do you mean, Drill?
That's it.
Still need a dictionary?
All right, we're back on the line. Just moments ago, Brent Contreras joined us on the line, and we're now going to continue with our roundtable style podcast. Brett, welcome to the podcast again.
Hey, Kevin. Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
Just had John.
I was just going to say, I was going to give a little background to the audience to catch them up. We've been having a conversation for like an hour, not recording anything, and we were like, oh my God, we need to record all this
Brett's
stuff.
Brett's a talk shop kind of guy. I realize that.
Which is why awesome. This episode is perfect to have him on.
Yeah.
I talked shop with Joe Ken yesterday for about 4.5 hours, and I think we would have talked the whole day if we didn't finally just say, okay, we got to go.
I didn't even realize he, like out of the blue, he started following me on Facebook. I'm like, oh crap, yeah, I want to get Joe on the show.
Yeah, it's important to listen to these guys who have years and years of strength coaching experience. You learn a lot from, you know, just listen. You know, you just pick up on little gems that they tell you. I really enjoyed it.
So what do you guys want to talk about? We obviously, to catch Brett up, what we talked about beforehand, we decided to not talk about that whole creatine issue on ABC News because everyone else has already talked about it. Talked about a thread that was on strengthcoach.com talking about post-workout nutrition and how I hate the answer of just drink chocolate milk. And
but you know what? We finished that off starting to talk about evidence-based, and Brett and I were just having that evidence-based conversation, which I thought was a perfect segue into what we were talking about already.
Would you want to continue it?
I would love to continue it. Brett, would you love to continue it?
I would.
Fantastic, then.
But I think,
yeah. Well, we were just talking. So, Brett, give him the catch up. We were just talking about the JOSPT.
Okay. Well, I guess we were talking about John and I were just kind of talking about what's best for our careers and what'll kind of and whether it's financially worth it. You know, I said once upon a time I was considering getting my DPT. But I didn't even get to mention this. But after doing the math, it's here. The colleges here are $36,000 a year. For 3 years, it's $108,000, and then you can't work. So, you know, you'd have to borrow another 30-some thousand a year. You know, you'd end up being $200,000 in debt. Would it make me that much better of a strength coach? I don't think the curriculum is very – I think I'd be very disappointed. I'd be bored to death. I think I'd be learning more on my own, doing research. But I am considering getting my PhD. So I can learn to research. Would that make me a better strength coach? That's debatable, but I am taking a PhD level biomechanics course right now, and I'm learning a ton. Does it make me a better strength coach? That's debatable too. I can mathematically explain stuff, but as far as, you know, I basically said I embarked on a 2-month kind of journey where I just would stay up late at night reading abstract after abstract on PubMed. And then if I liked it, if I liked the abstract a lot, I would read the full paper. And after like 2 straight months of that, doing that for like 4 hours a night, I concluded that a lot of the stuff that we do in the strength and conditioning industry is not evidence-based. It's based on opinion, not fact. And we take a lot of stuff for granted. And then I mentioned a cool February article that came out in the Journal of Orthopedic Sports Physical Therapy. And it was cool because it talked about I forgot a lot about it already, but it was a glute intervention program where they took someone with hamstring cramping and basically did an intervention program with a lot of glute activation and re-education, and it was just a case study, and they showed that after the whatever, say it was 6 weeks or 8 weeks, I can't remember, but after the period, this person had no more cramping. They had increased their glute activation on the side that cramped, decreased their hamstring activation on the side that cramped, and then they looked at the lengthening of the muscles too, and that improved as well. Like basically the hamstrings quit working so much. It almost lended a lot of credibility to like the whole Shirley Sarman synergistic dominance concept. So, but still that's not evidence-based because it's not it's a little bit evidence.
It's a low level. It's on the spectrum, but it's like a level D or something. It's one step above just expert opinion. And you can't, by definition, on a case study or even a case study series, derive cause and effect. So I agree with you. And the other problem of it is, okay, so how do we make like a double-blind study? You can't. You can't do that. So that first is right out. There's no way that you can blind someone to the fact that they're doing a glute exercise versus a hamstring exercise, or blind the therapist from the fact that they know that this is a glute exercise and this is hamstring. So you can never – I mean, I can't. At least I can't think of a way that you could have a level one criteria study. I mean, it just – I don't see how that intervention can be done that way. So then the other aspect of it is, how much evidence do we need to suggest that this is proper? And is that even something that you can do? Because how many people do you come in with specific hamstring cramping? What are your definitions, your study qualifications, and how do you actually get enough people to make this a credible study? 10 subjects? Not really that credible. So, that's the problems that we deal with in strength conditioning, but definitely in rehab, because to get these studies, they're not like the cancer studies where they have 30,000 participants, because cancer is unfortunately such a rampant, disease. It's these small survey groups that we deal with in our research and in strength and conditioning also, because people are so varied and, how do you define by sport, by position, by whatever. And getting cause and effect, getting the best solution to it. Is this the best solution? What defines the best solution? I think, Kevin, we had that discussion a couple weeks ago where it's like, what is better, a faster result or a longer lasting result? Is it an economic result, or is it, Like, because for instance, like back pain, we know by research, actually by statistics, that everyone will, if you have back pain, 80% of people get back pain, and within 8 months, everyone is better anyway. So, is it enough?
And it's like the back pain research is crazy. Like,
crazy.
So, I mean, it's related to, but you can there are studies that show that it's not correlated with flexion extension, sitting. There are several big studies that show it's not correlated with sitting, but there are some studies that, and then you can find single studies that show anything. You can find single studies that show that it's correlated with not having a lot of friends, being depressed. And it's very genetic. They take twins, and one does everything right, lifts properly, exercises. The other does everything wrong. They both end up getting degenerative disc disease or whatever. It's very genetic too. So
the causes and effects of these things. That's why that case study is good, except that it really doesn't tell us anything, because we don't know, was the intervention, was it the fact that the glutes got stronger? Do we know for a fact that it was just the exercise itself? Do we know that it was just the time and it had nothing to do with the exercise? Do we know anything? We don't. We know we have a possible explanation for the fact that this person got better. We have, you know, reasonable, you know, we can suggest that, yeah, this is probably the case. And we certainly have theoretical background that supports it. And there's research to that theory too. But from that single study, we can't really say much of anything. All we can really say is this person seems to have gotten better, and we hope it's because of what we did. But, you know, if I give, an ART treatment to someone and they get better, they come back in the next day and they say they felt great, that's awesome, but I could probably wave a magic wand over their shoulder and the next day they'll come back and say it was great too, because placebo, or just
the placebo. I always tell people, the placebo effect is the most well documented and most effective tool that ever. And that, it's funny. That's why I always kind of try and meet a client in the middle with program design and stuff like that. I want them to like their workout and believe in it, because that alone will. Like, the more they believe in it, the more results they're going to see. I mean, that's a huge component to things. The placebo effect is huge.
Yeah, not to mention even the fact that, you know, for instance, like, you know, without – I looked at the study but I didn't read it. But it's – you know, did they put their hands on the person? If they put their hands on the person, we know that that affects healing as well. Just the – and we don't even know why exactly, but that the healing touch is a well-documented fact, and people that are treated with a hands-on approach appear to get better than a non-hands-on approach, because there's a stimulatory effect there too. So maybe it had nothing to do with the exercises. Maybe just the fact that this guy was, you know, received some hands-on, you know, biofeedback was enough to make him feel better. So the fact is, we don't know exactly why this worked, and it may end up being the fact that, well, it wasn't this series of exercises. Maybe he could have done something completely differently and still felt better. So the fact is, we don't know exactly why he got better at all. But, you know, it's still better than nothing, but you can't base it therefore say that this is fact. You can say that maybe, possibly we might be onto something. And I think that's the biggest issue with what you were saying before about, like, guru and about how people just kind of do things based on what they've heard, because people start claiming that they know, and they don't know. And
they don't know, I'm certainly guilty of that. You know, like, you know, I try and talk about my glute exercise, my hip thrust and stuff. You know, I could present a great argument using scientific rationale. I can say, look at the moment arm of the hips as you know, as it goes from flexion to extension. I could use a lot of different arguments. Look at, you know, some EMG evidence out there, that some from different studies. But until they do a study showing, you know, this person did squats and this person did hip thrusts, or this group did squats, this group did hip thrusts, and this, you know, this one led to more glute hypertrophy. Until we do that, we don't know. I have my theories, but until it's proven, it's just a theory. And so I'm definitely guilty as a writer and a strength coach. We have what we believe to be true, but I just kind of think we take a lot for granted as far, and like core stability stuff. Does that transfer more to what we do in the weight room or more to the field? Right. Like, I train one of the best vertical jumpers in the world, this guy named Kenny Dobbs. He could kiss the rim. He participated in dunk contests. Yeah, he's crazy. He participated in dunk contests around the world. This guy had the weakest core. I mean, and he could jump 48-inch vertical leap. I mean, this guy could jump like over cars and stuff. And it's, he did not need core stability. He didn't need core strength. You know, when you watch someone jump, are their cores collapsing? You know, it's like. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I've seen like three studies that show that core stability and core strength don't improve certain measures of performance. But we know the exercises are effective. We know when we do an ab wheel rollout, holy crap. We know when we do a Pavlov press, wow, you know, does it transfer to the field? You know, maybe it just, maybe it helps our weightlifting form better, which then keeps us safer in the gym. But the bottom line is I don't know and you don't know and we all think so. But if you said that to a typical strength coach, he'd act like you're criticizing his mama or something, you know, like
And I think that that's what's important because, you know, people might say, well, who cares if you're, you know, the different, you know, it's just, you're just arguing over semantics, but it's not. Because if you believe in a theory strong enough that when evidence comes around that suggests that that theory is incorrect, you dismiss it. And that's a psychological fact because they've done the research that shows that. It's cherry picking. It's research cherry picking. And there's a psychological reason for that because people are more inclined to find fault with something that they don't agree with than for something that they do. So once you find a theory that you like and you start to – and you see a – you know, you try it and you see good results and you say this has got to be right, then when that next study comes down that's a good study that suggests that you're on the wrong track and the reason why you're seeing results is not because of what you think, you're very quick to say, yeah, but you know what? This only had a study of 20 people. I can't trust this. And it and you dismiss the evidence against it.
That's where you see the guys that are overly skeptical that just don't want to believe anything. And then you're going, okay, you just don't understand research. Because this really does tell us a lot. You know? And if you're the guy that goes, you know, I don't need research to tell me anything. I know what works. And I, you know, like, and, but in a way I can kind of relate. Because if you're like a, just kind of a in the trenches guy who's never read any studies and, but you've been training for 20 years and you've developed a great system and you know what works. But I, and that's why it's important to have kind of as you, like I'm 34 years old now and I'm more to a point now where I've been training for, you know, a lot of years now. I kind of gain more from, you always have to be training clients, but I purposely don't want to be training 8 hours out of the day anymore because I actually become a better trainer by having more time to research and read and learn, you know, take a college course, I'm taking a PhD level biomechanics course right now. I'm learning a ton. And, but you know, that's to be like a top level guy, you need the experience and then eventually you need to learn how to, you know, kind of like interpret the research because that's a whole skill of its own, you know. You can't just start reading journals and know what you're, you know, how to critique it. So,
yep.
That's why I spend $10 a month for Alan Aragon's research review so he can interpret it for me.
There you go.
I just don't have the time to go through journals, and I think it's really hard to balance out the hands-on stuff with also making sure you're opening up a book or, you know, I've been sucking these last couple weeks. I have Nick Tumanello's new DVDs and I haven't even literally had a chance to watch him yet. And even Gray Cook's new book.
Watch that Joint Friendly one first. I loved it.
Everyone's telling me they're fantastic. I mean, and I just, you know, unfortunately I have to go to the facility to work and I have to still, you know, pack up and do stupid shopping.
Kevin, that's funny you say that because you almost feel like, I don't know. I used to have a social life. I used to be very popular and I feel like you almost start feeling guilty for not working, you know, like I see your posts sometimes, Kevin, like on Facebook, like didn't get 6 hours of sleep and I'm going, to me, I still want to have a good physique. I think that gives me credibility and, you know, I still have strength goals and physique goals, and I know that if you're not sleeping 6 hours a night, it's going to negatively impact you.
My Marty's pissed right now because I promised him in Chicago, I'm like, Martin, after seeing your talk, I'm going to make sure I get 8 hours sleep every single night of the week, no matter what.
Liar.
And I'm hoping he's being like, oh man, that liar bee.
I wonder about because some nights I'll be like, oh God, I need to go to sleep. And then I'm like, super excited about what I'm reading or what I'm working on. And I just, I'm like, screw it. I'm just,
yeah, that's what I've been doing. And I've been like, man, I got to get this thing done because I think it's really exciting stuff. And I just, I can't, it's a priority right now. And I have,
I wonder, like Mel Siff was like that. If you talk to I was talking to my buddy Keith Snydman a couple weeks ago, and he was telling me a hilarious, like he actually went and stayed the night with Mel Siff. He was driving through and he told, you know, like he called Mel and said, I'm on the super training forums and I'd driving through and I'd love to stop by. And he said it was just crazy. The guy, I don't know. I'm a huge Mel Siff fan. I think he was pretty much the coolest guy in the world before he died. And so to hear this story was so funny to me. He stayed in his basement where there's all these like books and journals and like just filled with these, you know, a strength training library. And he said Mel Siff woke him up like at 4 in the morning or something like that. He said the guy didn't sleep. Like he woke him up and to do woke him up to do power cleans at like 4 in the morning. And then they do power cleans for a while and talk about it. And then you know, maybe go eat or, you know, hang out for a little bit. And then move on to squats. And this guy just loved – he was so passionate – but he chose not to sleep a lot, and it was a decision he made because he said, I'm basically too excited. I love learning, and so I wonder if there's anything to like being excited and being like do any of the hormonal effects of loving what you do, and Do they counteract any of the negative effects from not sleeping? Kind of like when you're in a new relationship, I think there have been studies that show that your hormones are changed because you're so excited. Yeah. It's all new, and I wonder about that because I guess I try and justify not sleeping a lot.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because, you know, even though I haven't been sleeping as much as I normally do, I seem to be having plenty of energy, whether it's, you know, supplement related. You know, I won't beat around the bush. I have been having about 2 spikes a day for the last 3 weeks or so, which, you know, it's kind of a running joke, but it has been allowing me to have like severe boosts in productivity where I can actually focus in. It's like the I liken it to the kids in college that deal their Adderall and stuff like that. You know, at least I'm not doing prescription drugs. It's just caffeine and Yohimbe plus 25,000% of my daily B12 vitamins. So I think it's right now I've rationalized it as I'm trading. And you're right, Brett. Like right now my strength isn't great. Like I mean, I these last couple of weeks we're coming up in about 2 months now that I've been doing this. You know, my strength hasn't really increased. My physique hasn't gotten better, but it's definitely stayed the same. And you just kind of have to pick and choose your battles. And it's helped me kind of understand where some of my clients are coming from better when I have clients that – I have one client that travels almost every single week. He's flying to either Chicago or to New York or, you know, New Jersey or something like that. And, you know, he doesn't get to sleep very much, and I can understand his situation a little bit better because I find myself in the same situation. I'm able to help him out a little bit more that way. So I'm trying to rationalize it as best I can to myself. We just talked for 45 minutes about rationalization, and it's just one of those things where
I'll tell you a crazy story that shows how like psychotic I am. I don't know if you guys started – I think I interviewed Matt Perryman for my blog, but I really like his stuff. He's just kind of all about strength training, like training for strength. And, you know, when you – he doesn't delve into – you know, I think he knows how to train for sports-specific purposes, but he focuses – like most of his blogs are on, you know, just – you know, he's like a guy who lifts weights and wants to get strong too, and it kind of has its own rules when you just – when you're just training for strength and you don't care about, you know, plyometrics and sprints and agility and, you know, explosive work and stuff like that. So he had looked at like some of John Bro's, the trainer out in Vegas who trains Olympic weightlifters. And this guy has this crazy philosophy and says squat, you know, they do 6 exercises, squat, power clean, power snatch, clean and jerk, snatch, and front squat. I don't know if I mentioned that, but they do like 6 exercises and they do it like 2-3 times a day, like 7 days a week, you know, his athletes get super, super strong and explosive. And they talked about it. If you're working out 7 days a week, you know, that would lead to overtraining, but they basically said there's no such thing as overtraining, which is not true. Obviously there is such thing and it's very serious, but, they said how, they call it the dark phase or the dark period or something like that, where you're not sleeping well, you're irritable, your immune system is compromised, your sex drive is down, all these indicators of overreaching, and then all of a sudden your brain compensates and you're neurochemically starts secreting additional, like maybe neurotransmitters or hormones or endorphins or something, and it leads to super compensation, and then you get through the dark period, and then you become normal, and then you get like a rebound of strength. Well, I'm so crazy that I just decided, well, this would actually be a good plan that's conducive to my goals, to see if I can I want to try this routine and see if I can get away with, squatting and benching and deadlifting 7 days a week, just to see if I can kind of get away with it. And if it does screw with my sleep, so be it. I don't want to, I have so much to do. I don't care if I don't sleep so much. And so I found that I did this routine and it does. It screws with your sleep. But I said, I don't care because I'm super productive. Like I'm working 19 hours out of the day. These other people are working, 10-hour days or something, I'm putting in more hours. And it's crazy. I'm gaining strength. I actually got stronger from the last, I'd say, 2 months of experimenting with this. I've gotten stronger, but I've gone through, I got sick, I got a cold, I've been irritable, I haven't been sleeping well. I have developed some knee, patella tendon issues, and my knees are indestructible. They're never sore, but from squatting every day. But they're, I guess I'm going off on a tangent. There's ways to make it work. You can't do 5 sets of 5 every day. I do 3 sets of 1 on the big lifts where I'm ramping up. So really I'm getting 1 rep, one rep in that's really, hard and taxing per workout, per lift. And then at the end I'll throw in something like hypertrophy related. But it's just interesting because to me that I guess we just went on a total tangent, but it made me think we don't have an adequate understanding of just training for strength. I think, do you guys ever remember the article that Charles Poliquin wrote about the earth? I don't know. It was like wind types, fire types, wood types or something. It was like,
sounds like Poliquin.
Yeah.
I read that article and I thought this was years ago, and I read it and I thought this guy's like turned, this guy's turned Paul Check. He's crazy. And now, I look at it now and he basically says there are types who respond to volume. There are types who respond to intensity. I don't think he mentioned frequency in there, but I think there are types who respond well to frequency. And if you tweak their program design variables a little bit towards more frequency, but chill out on the volume side per workout, I think some people can respond well to that. I think there's more to learn in that area.
I think the interesting question would be, how long do you have to train in a certain fashion to determine whether you are, more of a frequency guy or more of a higher volume guy?
Well, and here's the other part of it, too. How do we determine those people?
No, that's what I mean.
I mean, before that, instead of it being a trial and error, are there ways that we can decide that?
You don't look at their blood type, John. That's what we got.
Well, yeah, but that's what I'm talking about, because it's like, is there a clinical prediction?
I think there, I think over time we will be able to look at maybe it's in their DNA or something, but, the bottom line is to keep trying to learn more and keep trying to progress and not assuming that we know it all. I remember, when I was 24, maybe, I think I was 24 years old, I had always done high volume training, body part splits, and I came on to HIIT training, and I thought, God, this is retarded. Like, this is stupid. Who would do 1 set to failure? But I was like, maybe I'll try and cut down on my volume and see if it helps, and it did. I got stronger, and then I was like, okay, if maybe there's something to it. I did HIIT for 8 months and saw more results in those 8 months than I ever have in my entire life, and it's probably because it was new. I had been doing high volume training for 8 to 9 straight years, so it was different. Did I stick with HIIT forever? No, but I remember, I think I heard Mike Boyle saying that he did well with HIIT or with low volume training in general. And some people do better with different types of workouts, but also kind of like when you learn a new exercise, there's gains to be made. Like if you've never, like if I look back at the time in my life when I've experienced growth spurts from weight training, the first time is when I learned how to full squat and started squatting deep. My, you know, quads, my, you know, adductors, they all grew, and my glutes, everything. And then the second time was when I learned how to deadlift, you know, heavy. And that first year of deadlifting, like kind of like when you learn a new exercise, there's gains to be made because you've never reaped the benefits from it. When you try a new program, whether it's, you know, if you've never done high volume training, if you've never done high intensity, if you've never done high frequency training, there might be some gains to be made that you know, never would have experienced had you always stuck to the same type of program year in, year out.
Right, of course.
And then there's where it gets, yeah, where it gets complicated, though, is when you train athletes with combined training. It's so complicated when you deal with, you know, strength training, speed training, you know, agility training, power training, and, you know, energy system training. It's just so, but it's easier to work with these things when you're just a guy who's lifting weights for fun, trying to train for strength, trying to get stronger, trying to get more muscular. But I it's definitely an area that I find interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. And then the other side of it, though, is if it works, why did it work? Did it work only because you happened to be in a higher stress time and not even realize it? And so the reducing your training volume was actually beneficial, not because low volume training works for you, but because of everything else going on, it fit in the best at the best time. And then the opposite side, if something didn't work, is it because the training didn't work, or is it because your lifestyle at the time of the change in your training didn't work, and at another period it would have worked better, you know?
And is it like, how long will it benefit? Like,
right.
So you can switch to, like, am I going to do high frequency training forever? No, it's
that's not good. It looks like we just
strongest people in the world. Would Andy Bolton, you know, would Andy Bolton be able to deadlift heavy? Like, because I can deadlift like 565 right now, and so, you know, like 90. If I go to 90%, because I always try and do at least one single to 90%. You know, that's only, you know, say, I don't know, say it's 400,
515. 90% of 565?
Is
515.
It?
515.
Okay.
No,
well,
510.
I haven't been doing 90%. Like, some days I'll go, some days, like with a squat and bench, I found I can go heavy every day. And I don't know, my shoulders do not hurt from benching. I could literally, but I've been probably doing like.
Don't six, tell five, Kevin six. That. Don't I know. Tell Kevin that.
Sons of bitches, but, and you're benching. I hate you all.
But I can squat frequently too, but I have had some knee pain, so I've had to back off a little. And but like with deadlifts, I don't go as heavy, but if I feel like it, I'll go, you know. But it's weird, I definitely have gotten stronger from this type of experiment. But, you know, at the end, you just kind of learn, like, well, you know, when you have a client, you can you start out with your basic template, and then over time you kind of try and see if they maybe are a little bit more volume oriented, or maybe they're a little more intensity oriented, or maybe they're a little more frequency oriented, and you know, and maybe you period. I mean, I think periodization deals with that, but I've always been real big on kind of auto regulatory training, and kind of like, because when you're not a strength coach like me, I'm a personal trainer. I ask questions. I get really in tune with the individual, and I can really individualize their programming. So definitely some more, you know, more knowledge to be learned in that area.
Well, I think this was a great place to wrap it up because I have to go. So what I quickly want to say is, Brett, thank you for coming on. And if people haven't already, make sure they check out Brett's blog at brettcontreras.wordpress.com. Right now, and it's not because you're on the show, but right now I'd probably rank it as the blog I go to the most, quite simply, or for two reasons, for the content, and then also for the roundup that you do every week for all the stuff that you read, because I use it as my go-to source to make sure I am keeping up on everything I should be reading. So kudos, yeah, my to you,
good,
sir.
I call them good reads for the week, and I have links to everyone else's blogs and articles.
Like literally 20, 30 links.
Yeah, it's a little insane.
No, this week there were over 100.
Holy sh! Whoops, I almost swore. Yeah, that's
you did before when you were quoting.
You know what? Tate's I'm quoting article. Dave Tate, so I can swear when I quote Dave. Like just like when he's on the show, he can swear all he wants. So, yeah, that's how we're going to wrap it up. And you might have heard this a week after we recorded it, because I think this is going to be our next week's podcast, because it was that good, and we're not going to have time to record a podcast next week. So
there you go.
Anytime you guys want me, I can usually work my schedule, so I'm happy to jump on like this.
Like I said, I think we talked at the Massachusetts seminar, or the Providence seminar, but yeah, I'd love to get you on every once in a while, Brett. I just always, it's a good time to talk shop, and you're always a wealth of information, so it's a pleasure to have you back on.
Well, thank you.
All right, so for everyone else out there, don't forget to check out thefitcast.com. Please subscribe through iTunes. Leave a review if you like the show. If you don't like the show, don't leave a review. And you can follow John and myself on Facebook. You can check us or check me out at Twitter at twitter.com/KevinLarib. You can check out Brett at twitter.com/BrettContreras. And I think that's it. I hope you guys all have a great week. Thank you for, again, being patient with the recent episodes of the FitCast for not getting them out as regular as we normally do. But I promise once I get all moved in, we will be back to our regularly scheduled podcasts. And, yeah, I guess that's it. Thanks, everyone. Have a great week. All right, we're in the off-topic discussion. It's myself. It's Lee Peel. Lee, what's up?
Not much, Kevin. Taking a much-needed break from renovating my basement.
Yeah, how's that going?
It's going good. I just got the mirrors up, which was absolutely
so you're
terrifying.
Making like a dance studio in your basement.
Yeah, well, it's like I have one room that's dedicated to music that won't be done for a very long time. And it's just not going to be done for a while, and that's fine. And then I have another room that I wanted to dedicate to basically like dancing and like body weight training, because most of the heavy lifting stuff, which I can't even really do right now, but I do at my gym. So there's basically, it would be my home gym and stuff that I could do at home, like TRX kind of stuff and body weight stuff and dancing and things like that. So I have carpet all in my basement and all that kind of stuff, or had carpet. Now it's concrete and will soon be wood flooring and all that kind of stuff. So I'm doing that and painting and graphics and mirrors and all that kind of stuff. And it's coming together. It's looking very cool. I'm excited for it to be done, but it probably won't be done for that room. It probably won't be done until tomorrow night.
Is one of them going to be like a recording studio kind of thing?
Well, it won't be necessarily like it's not going to be a recording studio per se. It'll be like a demo studio. I'll be able to do good demo work in there, but it won't be any place that's set or at all capable for doing like real recording. Like a drum set will never be able to come in there and sound good.
Gotcha.
But it'll be good to put together general like electronic stuff, and you know, acoustic guitar sound will sound pretty good in there, the way that I'm gonna do it. And you know, so stuff like that'll be good. It'll be good for demoing and practicing everything, so that when I go into studios, it'll move much quicker and much smoother, because it's very costly to go into studios. So it's good to have everything all in a row and ready to go before you go in there, so you can save as much money as possible, because it gets expensive really fast.
How's really your arcade bad. Coming along?
I was looking into a pinball machine, but I haven't found it yet. Other than that, I think that I'm going to have to stick to my computer being my virtual arcade.
That doesn't count.
Well, that's all I got right now, Kevin, because it's either one of the rooms would have had to have accommodate that, and it's just not possible. Maybe in the music studio room, I could fit a little pinball machine in the corner. Maybe. Right. Yeah. How is your arcade apartment coming?
Oh, it's good. You know, it's all moved in, and I don't think we talked. We haven't done a podcast in a while, but yeah, it's all done. My arcade is almost it's almost done. I think I still need a Donkey Kong machine, but other than that, I will be done. I'm not going to buy anything else, I don't think so.
So that's it? All the ones that you have, is it?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've been looking for a Back to the Future pinball machine, but they're, you know, hard to come by.
They are very hard to come by.
And they're a bitch to keep up. They break down easily, and they're not really easy to repair, and it's hard to find someone to repair them. So, but you know, I'm still looking for something like around a grand. They usually go for like, you know, 1500, but if I can snag one for $1,000, and I can actually save up the money to do that, I'll probably buy one because it's a great piece of Back to the Future memorabilia. It's a great, although it does not have the likeness of Michael J. Fox.
For legal reasons.
For legal reasons. He's anti-pinball, but for some reason he put his face on a horrible Nintendo game. People who had Nintendo know what I'm talking about when I say Back to the Future.
Isn't it kind of like Paperboy? But, you know, like it was kind of,
I know
of
what
like,
you mean.
You know, it was kind of like Paperboy, but not even that cool.
It is horrible, and it's like the same music the whole game is like, and it's like it plays that the whole time, and it's has nothing to do with the movie. It is just absolutely horrible. You don't see a DeLorean until the very last level, and you have to be, you know, an autistic savant to be able to actually make it that far. So it's you know, it's no good. You can watch the ending on YouTube, and it just says, "Congratulations, you beat Back to the Future," and that's what you get.
I got to say, if you're not Dustin Hoffman in Rain Man, it's not for you. Got it.
No, dude. In between Wapner, he was always playing Back to the Future.
All right. Good to know.
Also, I wanted to quickly mention that I watched Little Monsters last night, and it doesn't really hold up. It's on Netflix Instant Queue if you guys want to check that out.
What do you mean it doesn't hold up to what you thought of it in the past?
Well, here's
you still were not moved by the handing over of the bomber jacket at the end,
dude. Fred Savage does cry, like he does say, you know, Maurice, you're my best friend.
And it's touching.
Mandel's best performance, arguably, besides his cartoon.
Oh God, it was Howie Mandel.
Yeah,
forget that.
Before his fame and Deal or No Deal, he was living it up in the world of the monsters under kids' beds.
So it didn't live up. Why did it not live up?
Well, I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's just, it is really young Fred Savage, but here's a cool thing. I don't know if people know this, but this isn't really a Six Degrees thing, but it has, obviously it stars Fred Savage and his little brother in the movie is his real brother, Ben Savage.
Boy Meets World.
Correct. And his father is played by Daniel Stern, who plays the narrator this is like one of my favorite shows when I was a kid, Kevin Arnold.
What's going on? Hey Arnold.
No, not Hey Arnold. Come on.
What? Oh, Wonder Years.
From the Wonder Years.
Wait, Daniel Stern was narrator from Wonder
correct.
Years?
Correct.
Really?
He played adult Fred. He played adult Kevin Arnold in the Wonder
That's
Years.
That's him. Yeah. The guy from Rookie of the Year.
Yeah. And, you know, Home Alone. And City Slickers.
Home Alone. Yeah, I knew I was missing a pivotal one there.
And Celtic Pride.
Yes.
Why have you... Don't tell me you've seen that movie, Lee. That movie's horrible.
Look, I watched a lot of movies in my time. But you say Daniel Stern, and the first thing I said was Rookie of the Year. What does that say about me?
That's a good movie. We got,
it is a good movie. I won tickets to that movie. I won radio tickets to that movie. I got to see the premiere.
Oh, look at you.
I'm big cheese when I was like 8.
Did you wear the high socks and the...
Well, I was a big Cubs fan when I was a kid.
Oh.
I was a big Cubs fan, so I loved that movie very much. But that's a whole other story. I own it. I own a double collection of Rookie of the Year and Sandlot. Thank you very much.
Is that like on the same DVD?
It is. It's one of those double package
DVDs. Thanks. And they like degrade the quality of the video.
I know it is really bad, but like I couldn't resist it. I was like, oh my God, it's Sandlot and Rookie of the Year at the same time for like $6.99. Like there's nothing you can do. You can't walk away from that.
It's like you can buy all 4 Lethal Weapon movies on one DVD.
Yeah, and it
just looks like they're on like 20-year-old VHS tapes.
I know, but I earned it. I knew I earned that exact one. You can't walk away from those prices. It's too brilliant. But I vowed never to do it again because it's cheap. It's cheap. I won't do it anymore.
Well, if you want, you don't have a Blu-ray player yet, but Best Buy had a really good sale like 2 weeks ago. I picked up Starship Troopers for $9.99. Awesome movie.
I still haven't seen Starship.
Oh my God. And you've said you've seen like, this is like the best, made by the guy that brought us Total Recall in Blade Runner.
Oh, really? Oh, then I am missing out.
And it's got Johnny Rico. It's got, what's that? That girl that was in Wild Things. She had the lesbian scene.
Nev Campbell or Denise Richards?
Denise Richards. Young Denise Richards before she got all her own TV show and stuff. So that was really good.
I'm going to have to watch a trailer of this.
Yeah, but no. Little Monsters, you know, check it out.
Well, you know, every time I think of Little Monsters, I think of Vice Versa. I think it's Vice Versa. Is it Vice Versa? Is that what they call that one? You know, the one where he Judge Reinhold is his dad, and they switch places. Him and Fred Savage. Did you ever see that movie? Nah.
I have seen that movie, but I don't remember it. I mean, I remember it, but I don't remember actually any details or whatsoever. I mean, I'm a big Fred Savage fan just from, I mean, the Wonder Years. His name was Kevin. My name was Kevin growing up, and he was dating Winnie Cooper. I wanted to date Winnie Cooper. Something like that. And okay. He'd also got, you know, to go to California with Jimmy to go play Super Mario Brothers 3 before anyone else. So
the
Wizard. That was a big, I own that on DVD. What's up? No director's commentary, sadly.
And we just so thought it was going to be there.
I mean, I thought there were going to be bonus scenes, outtakes, but like, what, talks of a sequel.
The Super Mario Brothers 3 you did not see.
But, you know, true Hollywood story on the turmoil of the development of the movie and all that stuff. They made that movie in like 2 weeks.
The horrible sadness of the Power Glove and its so terrible demise and utter failure in the video game world. Yeah. Not quite as bad as what the number pad thing.
The power pad.
That was, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't mess with that shit. I play with a controller.
Oh, okay. All right. I see. You're keeping it real, Holmes. Okay.
At one time I had the turbo controller that had the turbo buttons on it, but my dog ate the freaking controller and my parents yelled at me for it. Shouldn't have left the controller out, Kevin.
That was kind of not your fault. I mean, I don't think it's really fair of them to attack you about something
like that.
That's
why I moved out of my house. It happened last week. No, just kidding. Anything else going on, Lee?
No, I don't think so. I don't think I watched, what did I watch? Have I watched anything? I've been watching Jersey Shore, obviously, because.
How's that going? You know,
it's going good. It's going good. Currently, JWoww and Sammy, not friends, they're not talking. And, Sammy is back with Ronnie and, Vinny, totally, hit it with, the Jersey, dump. What, I don't know, the visit Snucky? To the Jersey dump. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Some, one of the other girls, but, anyway, yeah, it's things are going good. You know, they're going good at the Jersey Shore. It's amazing how many moderately attractive people can become so famous. I just think it's absolutely
well. They said like the situation may like is going to make like $5 million this year or something like that.
Yeah, I know, right? And he's about to be on Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, is he?
Cool. Yeah. Along with Jennifer Grey and The Hoff, which
I don't know who they are.
You
know David Hasselhoff.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know though, but
I didn't
yeah.
pay attention to him when I watched Baywatch, Lee. You know, I watched other actresses. You probably were looking at David Chokichief and Cody. Or no, what's boy. Not Cody? His son. Whatever his name. Cody, right? No, not Cody. Joshua Jackson, right? No, not Joshua. It's Joshua something. It's
Pacey and Mighty Ducks. You get your
No, he's on Fringe now.
Is that okay? For grown-up men to appreciate him on Fringe. Well, I appreciated him in Dawson's Creek long before he was on Fringe or the Mighty Ducks.
He got to, you know...
And Gossip, the movie Gossip, a very rare but excellent film.
Gossip.
With Lena Headey.
No way, from Terminator Sarah Connor Chronicles.
And,
there we go.
James Marsters and Kate Hudson.
Oh, wow. That's a good lineup.
No, it is. It's a good lineup. And Joshua Jackson. It's a very interesting movie. I highly recommend you. They have it at Stream Netflix. They have it on Netflix streaming. So
all right.
You should check that out. Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking about watching Fast and Furious tonight, though.
Okay, Kevin. We have to talk. On one first, you can add Vice Versa, the movie with Fred Savage and Judd Reinhold, to Netflix, although not streaming. Two, I think that we need to expand your movie collection a little bit. Now, I love you, and I love all three of those movies, Crank, Fast and the Furious, and Back to the Future.
And Transporter.
Transporter, of course. How could we forget? But, Kevin, you're going to wear them out, babe.
Okay, here, I got something good to talk about then. Actually, we already talked about this
It's not about talking about it, which we can, but I'm concerned that your brain is just going to start functioning on vocabulary and images only through those movies, which maybe not be a bad thing. Maybe it's what you want to have happen. I don't know.
What are you talking about? Look at those people down there. They let fear drive them. That's right. Dude, I got the Tokyo Drift soundtrack in my car, and I sometimes listen to that song, the Teriyaki Brothers song on my way to work, and I just get fired up.
Okay, so what's the other movie then? What's the other one you're going to talk about?
The other one is, it's an independent movie called Frequently Asked Questions About Time Travel.
And, the one with Anna...
Anna Faris.
Yeah. I didn't watch it yet. Ooh. I haven't watched it yet.
It's really good. It was on HBO on demand, but it's not on there anymore. But I'm sure you can rent it or get it some other way. It's definitely worth checking out. And if you like time travel movies, or you like science fiction, or if you like Anna Faris, or all three, you'll really enjoy it.
I will definitely check it out, because on my list, I have The Time Machine was the original one. It's the first one I ever saw. And then I was a Quantum Leap fan. Oof. And then, the Back to the Future.
You heard they're remaking it, right?
Quantum Leap?
Yeah.
With Scott Bakula?
He's going to be, handing off the torch to a new person traveling. A new, guy that's fixing, putting things right that once went wrong.
Mm.
Isn't that weird? I don't think I like that, because Bakula has no job right now.
I don't know if that sits well with me. Because, if he's alive, just use the Bakula.
And Dean Stockwell is still alive. And he was good in... You've been watching Battlestar Galactica, right? I thought you said you were...
Plan. It's there.
Okay.
But it just hasn't happened yet. But I didn't know he was in that. I love Dean Stockwell. So.
He's a trooper.
I guess, literally.
Okay. Wow. Are we done?
Obviously. I have, a whole new movie quay set up now. Cue. I said quay. Let's just stop it now before I sound more retarded.
Okay. No,
and then I just insulted people because I said retarded.
That's right.
I didn't mean it like that. So I'm sorry.
Calm down.
Well, I'll get hate mail.
That's not your email.
That's not my thing. It's support.
I know. All right. Well, we'll wrap it up. And there is 16 minutes of off topic to make up for last week.